You're listening to CKUT. The following is a previously broadcast program. Stay tuned.
F-Files
Radio.
Exploring feminism and technology through space and time.
Listening to F-Files on CKUT. I'm Sophie in today, and I am joined in the studio by Ellie Dell or Ariane Gagne. And we just heard a clip from one of their performance pieces. Ellie Dell aims to dive into crude, visceral, and enlightening experiences to come back and share what they have found in the abyss. Their practice makes use of calligraphy, diagrams, drawings, songs, and tattoos as tools which allow them to connect to their epigenetic legacy of trauma, poverty, mental health, and addiction problems, while invoking an inspiring heritage of witchcraft, visions, and spirituality. This process leads to pictorial objects that form an erratic cartography inspired by chaos magic, psychopomp literature, and ecofeminist practices. Like molts that result from moments of healing, evolution, or involution, their works integrate poetic messages. A sibylline prose that is blurred by sharp and sinuous scribbles and abstruse symbols. This textual aspect of their work is made to be sung, deciphered, or left to interpretation, taking the form of motivational phrases and enigmatic advice that serve as an invitation to regeneration, fluidity, and ruin. As a graduate of UCAM's Visual and Media Arts program, they live between Europe and Jaunjage, Montreal, where their work has been shown in exhibitions, festivals, and various public and private spaces, such as Project CASA, Art Souterrain, and Espace Maurice. They also exhibited pieces in Alcamo, Quebec City, Berlin, Brussels, Youngstown, Ohio, and Hudson, New York. You can see some of their work, which is currently on view at Espace Maurice here in Montreal as part of the group exhibit Datura, which is on right now. Welcome to the radio.
Thank you, Sophie.
Hello. Hi. Yeah, I'm so excited that you're here today. Yeah, you might just need to speak a little bit closer to the mic and get comfy.
Okay. Do you hear me?
I hear you.
I don't hear myself in the... But
I hear you. I think you might just need to speak a little bit closer.
Okay, perfect. Like this?
Yeah, like okay. This.
Perfect.
Yeah, first time on the radio, hey?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited to have our conversation today. So the piece that we played at the beginning of this episode was a clip from a video performance made for Festival Art Souterrain in 2022. Une percose pour le lambeau, or lullaby for the tattered, which is an invented incantatory ritual unfolding in the form of a self-inflicted live tattoo accompanied by a very long experimental lullaby with folkloric tones sung a cappella. The song's lyrics poetically address the omens of a coming climate apocalypse, the eco-anxiety that follows, and the imaginary possibilities prefigured by the ruin of this world. And you can hear the tattoo machine going in the background, which is almost its own instrument. So your work, your practice spans many disciplines, including tattooing, visual art, poetry, song, and performance. And I was wondering if you could speak about your journey into tattooing as an art form and about the materiality of your work, and in particular, skin as medium, which you use so much.
Yeah. Well, first, thank you for inviting me. I would say I started tattooing like 3 years ago, and it happened in my life in a way that was really not planned. It's someone that I was close with who showed me how to tattoo, and I was already doing a lot of drawing and painting, and this is how it started. And quickly after that, I was really fascinated by parchment, like vellum, medieval way of doing paper with like the veal skin. And so I talked about this to a client of mine. At that time I was like in my small studio on Papineau Street in Rosemont, and the person, I was like, I think I would love to try to do the parchment by myself, like DIY. And the person told me that their roommate was working in a butcher's shop and they had like pork skin hanging around their house, so they gave it to me as a tip. and that's how it all started. It was like, okay, I have the skin, now it's gonna rot, I have to do something with it. And I tattooed them and tanned them with the Cavicide, which is the product we use to disinfect the tattoo station, and some floor varnish. And it really didn't give the result I was, you know, expecting, but it was really interesting. And then it kind of all started from this this unexpected gift.
Yeah, a tip with pigskin.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of your practice when you work with skin that is off body, you know, working with pigskin. You've also worked with fish skin as well. It comes into kind of a sculptural element. And you, what were your roots as a practice? You said you were working more with like painting and visual art as well. And how do you kind of bring that into working with skin and working with the body?
Well, I feel like I've always worked the painting and drawing in a way that was linked to the skin. Like the first exhibitions I made were just like paintings, and it was called like Shed. So it was already really into my imagination, the kind of like the marks that are left on the body. I started working with the painting and drawing as a way to overcome a lot of trauma and a lot of, you know, it was really therapeutic at first. And I think tattoo is, it has something that is really like linked in itself to this.
Mm-hmm.
And I was using a lot of like found material already. I would use some sheets, like bed sheets that I wasn't using anymore, and I would like cut them and make canvases with them. So it already felt like kind of skins with the paint on it and like the texture. And so it, when I started working with skins, it was kind of a natural transition that happened into my practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so often when we talk about, because I know that your work really engages with, you know, trauma, addiction, and poverty, as is stated in your artist statement, and the body is so often representative of the experience as a person,
mm-hmm.
Both in difficulty and in harmony and joy. And I love the word that comes up of molting. And I wonder if you could speak more about how you use this kind of intimate practice as a healing, as therapy, and how that can be both applied for the self as well as towards community or people engaging with your work.
There's a lot of answers that I think about.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, like this idea of expressing those things and kind of letting them, leaving them behind in a way, like, you know, just letting it go, letting it flow. I think this is a power of art in general. And I also have this thing where sometimes I have moments of clarity, you know, I see a scheme that happened and I'm like, okay, this makes sense, I understand what happened and I understand the key for me to heal. And so I'm trying to kind of immortalize those moments of clarity when I work as a for paintings and drawing, but also the tattoo. And it's kind of like, for me, like a vademecum, like a little help, self-help, really cryptic help to remind me how I pass through challenges, and so I can come back when I'm again in this space to help me, you know. And I feel like for some pieces, it can work for other people that like are in contact with it.
Mm-hmm. A kind of catharsis as well.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. You reference chaos, magic, and spirituality as integral parts of your practice and inspiration. And I was wondering if you could explain what chaos magic is and what your relationship to magic and spirituality is and where you kind of come from that as, from a personal perspective on your practice.
Yeah, it's always been in my life the magic thing. My mom was really into some pagan traditions and really raised me with an idea that the world is magical. And so I've always felt the power of like the art also and symbolism and representation and how it can have an impact in your life, manifestation and stuff like this. Chaos magic, you know, it's like another realm. I'm really, the part that I really love about chaos magic is the sigil part. So the sigil is a spell that is made from a word that you would work on graphically, and then you would, this would be the spell, the word that you write or the sentence, and then to cast it, you have to destroy it. And since I was working a lot with calligraphy, at first, when I started doing sigil without knowing it, because I wrote some things on my work that were really, really, I think, intense, and I wanted to not censor them, but like kind of trigger warn or make it less accessible from the first sight. And so I started doing these things, modifying the way it looks so it's like less easy to read, less legible. And a friend of mine who was really had a lot of knowledge about these things, the chaos magic, told me about the sigil, and he was like, this is what you're doing, you know, you kind of like make it so cryptic that it's not readable anymore, that it's not legible anymore, and this, it channels energy. And the tattoo part made so much sense because it felt like the destruction. It's a wound, there is suffering, and I felt this had the power to kind of, make the spell work, you know, cast the spell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, using kind of like the body and energy as the activation of spell as well.
Yeah, I feel that magic needs a little sacrifice.
Mm.
And the tattoo added that part to the already the energy that was channeled through the doing the design.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and do you kind of consider in your own practice art making as a form of magic in and of itself?
Yeah, I would say. And sometimes some tattoos that I do for people, I think, have their own magic component.
Mm-hmm.
I like to tattoo people without like money involved, and I feel in those occasions it kind of like makes it more precious for the magical part. But I think it can also work sometimes, even if I'm paid.
Yeah, it's another form of sacrifice. An exchange. Yeah, I was wondering if we could go back to kind of the materiality and your process in making. So especially to describe for listeners who might not have an immediate visual reference to your sculptural work. So, and if you could kind of walk us through the process of you making sculptures or using tattoo onto skin and what kind of the end result that comes to.
Yeah. First, like the way I source the animal hides are always really linked to the context where I'm working. So I never know in advance what I'm gonna get or like how I'm gonna get it. Sometimes it has been super difficult to source them because it's like illegal to take some skins out of slaughterhouse, for example. And you can get pig skin to the butcher's shop, but the other skins, they remove them in the slaughterhouse and throw them away. So So I have to be creative in the ways that I source them. And I feel there is a part of magic also there, because it always comes my way in a weird way. And then there's a lot of, the practice of the skin is something that is stinky, that is really confronting. The death is something that we're not used to, like, be linked with in our society. And I was always really curious to, like, feel it, like the smell, or like to be closer to it as a concept, but also as like a material thing that will happen to all of us. And sometimes I found some roadkills and skinned them. And other times it was like last time in Ohio, it was I worked with these butchers that worked for hunters, and he gave me some deer skins from that were hunted there. And then sometimes I have to remove the hair. So the hair removal is a whole process. Sometimes I use, ashes and water to break the air follicle and remove it. It's a process that is long and involves a lot of energy. It's really physical, and the smell and the feeling of it is kind of intense. Mm-hmm. I feel like I lose a lot of energy after I'm so tired, and kind of like my soul is sucked in the piece.
Yeah, something that really strikes me when engaging with your work, because you are engaging closely, with death and bodily matter, which can definitely fall into morbidity really quickly. But I think that you are able to bring a certain sense of levity or also lightness to your work, especially through your use of text. And for instance, you reference lullaby a lot, and I was wondering if you could speak a little bit about your use of text as kind of poetry or song or incantation. You spoke a little bit about the sigil, but I know that you've also been moving into more performance aspects of your work, and what that process of bringing text from the page or from the skin and into the air has been like for you.
Yeah, I'm really fascinated by the part of the life cycle that is when death becomes life again. So the part that is like kind of the spring in the pagan imagery, the way that the seed comes from, like, takes its energy from the decomposing matter and then grows out of the soil again. And I feel like this is also what I'm trying to embody. I feel like my practice is performative, even if it's like just alone with the skin, because of the difficulty of the process. But I feel like I'm, at first it's like this material that is full of blood and like really, really kind of disgusting. And then to transform it, to work and to give it like something that is about like hope and life coming back and healing and growing. I think it's like something that really interests me, and this is how I'm trying to work when I do the skin pieces.
Mm-hmm.
The songs, it kind of, it's also it made so much sense, because it's all those texts, and the lullaby is also this kind of song that comes back and that brings you into the night, and that like helps you having a soft sleep. And I feel like the power of music is like, I love visual arts, but music as something, it brings the cell in another space, you know. It rearranges, it's rewiring the brain. It really does something to the body that I feel is so important and precious. And I really wanted to incorporate this in my practice. I'm really shy, so it at first it was really, really difficult. But the more I do it, the more I can feel the power of the energy when a performance is happening, what it does to people. It's like, yeah, I think it's pretty magic, like these incantations. And
yeah, I love what you said about a lullaby being something that enters you into the night or into sleep. And also historically how you can look at lullabies that would be sung to children, and kind of when examined a bit closer, they can be quite twisted, even though they're set to a beautiful melody as well.
I also read recently about, I was reading this book that my friend lended me of Georges Sand, and Georges Sand was really interested in like the old farmers, kind of like rooted in paganism in Europe. Mm-hmm. And she was writing at the time of like industrial revolution, and so those traditions were kind of like getting pushed away a little bit, but now they disappeared in most of Europe. But in her book, she was talking about this farmer who was singing herding songs to the beef, the cows. And those herding songs, I tried to find them on Spotify and like Google that, and I found out that there is this tradition that is still going on in Sweden that is a cool name, and it's songs for animals that the people sing to sheep and to cows. And I felt it really had a resemblance to the way I was singing also in my performances, and that also makes sense, you know, in a poetic way, because it's like for the animals also, and I work with the skins. So I learned this new link that I haven't seen this or discovered yet recently.
Yeah, I think those are such great moments when you realize that your practice falls close to something that's already pre-existing, that you didn't necessarily know existed before that. Those are really special moments. Time has flown by and we're almost out of time. So I know that your work right now is a part of a group exhibit currently up at Espace Maurice, but I was wondering if before we leave, you can tell our listeners where they can find your work and what might be coming up next for you as well.
So Datura, no, it's a really fun exhibition. It's a product of a residency we made in this warehouse in Ohio. It's Marie Ségolène, my creative friend, who organized it. And we all went with a bunch of artists there and worked with local artists and made all those pieces from the things we found there. And now we did the exhibition back in Youngstown, and then we took it back to Montreal, and it's up until February 16, I think. And the work that I show there is made from the deer skins that were hunted there, and there's this old story with like albino deer and stuff. No, it's super cool. Super cool. And for the next, I think I want to really work on the songs. Mm. I think this is the things that really interest me to deepen right now. I really want to write more and sing more. Maybe take a little break of the skin because it's energetically draining. So yeah.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear what more you have to offer. And thank you so much for sharing your time with me this morning and with our listeners. For everyone tuning in, we've been listening to an interview with Ellie Dell. I hope that everyone has a wonderful rest of their day.
Thank you, Sophie.
Yeah, thank you so much.
industrial city, there was a great emptiness, without any kind of sound, without any kind of harmony, without any kind of voice. Only a hideous monster, the monster of the silence, and his horrible laughing. The crew monster had been covered the mouth of every citizen from Montreal with a lot of stronger species of masking tape in order to keep quiet any opinion or disagreement. The Black Hand Productions presents The Seven Warriors, the battle for the voice of the voiceless. In 1987,